Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging. And their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And today's episode is just for the dads.
It really is. This podcast contains truth, laughter and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Mandy.
Hi, Kate.
Mandy and I are super happy to hand over the microphone to our gorgeous Gary.
Yay, Gary and his guest Trevor. So please, P-dads, anyone who wants to listen, happy Father's Day to you and enjoy this episode with our trusted P-dad, Gary.
Thank you, Mandy. Thank you, Kate. And hello, P's. Welcome to this testosterone-laden, balls-to-the-wall Dad's Day episode of Two P's in a Podcast. Yes, P-dad Gary here. And I have to say my son will be very impressed to hear that right out of the gate, I have said balls. Let's see how often balls get a mention over the next hour, given that this episode is about dadness, or at least the experiences of a couple of dads anyway. I'm chuffed at having been asked by Mandy and Kate to chat with you all today, and I hope you're going to enjoy the conversation you're about to hear. Before we get to that, though, as you know, Kate and Mandy have established a tradition of beginning each episode with a local weather report. So as I'm recording this, I look out the window. It's a warm, sunny day with springtime in the air on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. We are currently out of lockdown here, but I know that so many of you peas are in lockdown still again. So big love to you, whether you're blitzing it, whether you're doing just okay, or whether you are barely dragging yourself through it one day at a time. You know, what better way to ease the burden of lockdown for just an hour or so than by listening to a couple of blokes chat? So we're going to do our best for you, and we'll see how we go. Let me introduce you to a friend of mine. He's a P-dad who I know you're going to love listening to. In many ways, you know, this bloke exemplifies for me not just dadness in general, but P-dadness in particular. He and his gorgeous family also live here on the Sunshine Coast for now, although he is a bit homesick for the bush. His name is Trevor. He grew up in rural Victoria on a farm, which he now owns. He did well at school and then became a shearer and a wool classer on his farm and all around Australia. He's now a full-time dad of five kids, including nine-year-old twin boys with cerebral palsy. G'day, Trevor.
G'day, Gary. What an introduction, eh?
Well, thanks for joining me. How amazing is this? I'll tell you what this feels like. To me, this feels like you and I, just a couple of ordinary-looking blokes. Well, one of us is, anyway. we have just been handed the keys to a Lamborghini and told to take it out for a spin around the track. Just go for it. Drive like the wind. And I'm starting to channel H.G. Nelson right now. But it does kind of feel like that to me because, you know, Mandy and Kate have crafted this podcast from nothing to the beautiful thing that it is today. And they've gathered together this stunning community of peas who love each other and support each other and give guidance to each other and cry with each other and laugh and everything, right? And then along comes Father's Day and they say to me, why don't you take the episode? Just take the whole hour. Do whatever you want. Take it for a spin. How generous. How generous is that? So we had better try not to crash it, right? Maybe just a scratch or two, and that's about it. So
how fast can we go?
Well, let's see, shall we? Let's see how fast this hour goes. But look, speaking of Father's Day, what's Father's Day like at your place?
Oh,
what do you do?
We don't really have a tradition. We just go with the flow.
Yeah.
I mean, every day is Father's Day in one way. I know it's a bit cliche, but I get to spend every morning and every evening with my kids before I kick them off to school. So it's I guess I'm a little different to what's considered the average dad in Australia, where often they're the working party, although that's changing a lot now. But every day is Father's Day, really.
But this
is just another day.
That's lovely to hear. I'm so impressed. We'll come to that in a minute. Let me ask you, are you a gift catalog kind of guy?
No.
Are you a catalog kind of guy at all? Perhaps maybe at Mitre 10 or something. But well,
yeah, that's right.
Somebody alerted me to this fact just yesterday that the Dimmocks Books gift catalog for Father's Day this year, they have a section called the Rad Dad Catalog, which is, you know, really impressive. But in the Rad Dad, I'm not a catalog kind of guy either, to be honest, but somebody pointed this out to me, that in the Rad Dad catalog this year, there is one book in particular that I would like to make mention of, The Invisible Life of Us by Kate Jones and Mandy Hose. Isn't that cool? These guys have written a book. It's only just come out. They had to miss the book signing because of COVID lockdowns and so on. But it's doing really well. It's getting out there. It's in the Dimmocks catalog. So, Pease, if you're listening and you're still looking for a Father's Day gift, I recommend you have a look at this one. It's in the nonfiction section. I think it should be in the romance section myself. But it's in the nonfiction section, and it's Kate and Mandy's book, The Invisible Life of Us. I'm not getting paid to say that. I just thought I'd mention it because I think it's very cool. So, righto, awesome. Trev, let's do this. Yeah. The peas like to start in a certain way, so we'll just fit in, shall we, to get things moving. We'll ease up to full speed acceleration by doing the three questions. So what awards did you win at school, Trev?
Oh, there wasn't a lot of awards. I was particularly good at school, so I got pretty high achievements at school. They all encouraged me to stay there, but I left early anyway because my heart wasn't in it. So it's just the way it rolls, I guess.
Look, that's perfectly fine, mate. No shame here. I mean, awards were not a big deal years ago anyway, were they? It was not the big thing that it is now.
No, you don't have to achieve much to get an award now.
Yeah, that's a big topic with the peas. So, all right, well, let's move straight into the second question then. We'll shift into second gear. We've got up to first. We're doing well. What's your favourite music, or do you have some music that you'd like to recommend to everyone?
Look, I wouldn't say that I've got a single song that I go to when I need to chill out and get away from it all. But anything that I grew up with, which was country and a bit of 80s rock, is where my heart lays, and that helps me get through the days that are a bit tougher than others. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, it takes you back to when, you know, you were a kid, doesn't it, sometimes?
Music. Yeah, and so, maybe when life was a bit easier.
Yeah.
That's probably the heart of it, yeah.
Life on the farm, yeah. Yep. And so into third gear, why are you a P?
Well, I think I fit into this group just because 9 years ago, my world was shaken at its roots, really. I'd already had two children, and then I had twin boys born at 26 weeks into this world, and it was a very chaotic time.
Wow. But, well, we want to hear all about that, so let's get to that. Before we do, let me get some background there, because you've mentioned this a couple of times now. Tell us about shearing and farm life. Like, you miss it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I guess it's one of those jobs, and I was having a conversation with someone about this not so long ago. It's really interesting that some of the hardest jobs you've ever done are the ones you miss the most. And shearing is physically challenging. It keeps you fit. It's a skill. It's not just any Joe Blow can run his hand to it. But if you practice for long enough, you'll get there. And I guess I was reasonably good at it and enjoyed the challenge because I'm a bit competitive, and you get you work in teams, so there's a number of other people in the working environment with you as you're shearing sheep, and as a team, that you're seeing who can shear the most, and it gets a bit competitive, and that's the fun of it, really.
And as you say, it must be tough. Like, I wouldn't even begin to imagine, you know, having a go at that. I'm just wondering whether, I mean, it sounds like some of the qualities that brought out the enjoyment of that for you, you know, the challenge, the toughness, the competitiveness, all of that sort of thing, probably set you up well in later life for other challenges, I imagine.
I think you're probably right. It's certainly that, and determination. You know, I guess something that when you don't have much to start with, determination builds inside you, and the desire to be successful and get what you want has to come from within, because there's no other way of getting it. And I think that's, you know, that challenge. I was actually quite a small kid. I was not gifted physically, and I had to work really hard to get to where I got to with that. So I guess that's an achievement that I've reveled in a little bit, and certainly life was a bit free, a bit easier back then, a bit simpler.
And what about farm life? I mean, do you like the wide open spaces, the quiet, the solitude? Is that the kind of farm life you like?
Yeah, that's me.
So I'm not a city boy.
I'm not a city boy. You know, the crowds, the beaches, they all sound good in theory. In reality, I would much rather be camped out beside a river with not another soul in sight and a fishing rod in my hand, or just listening to the birds, or just having the kids there showing them a different way of life. That's where my heart lies.
And yet here you are, an at-home dad, you know, five kids. Well, they're not all at home now, I take it, but, you know, living pretty close together and getting through the busyness and the routine of every day. Does that chafe at you? And if so, how do you carve out some space for yourself to sort of keep yourself going?
Yeah, it's something that I've, in this last, 2013 when we moved to the Sunshine Coast, it's certainly something that I've had to deal with since then, because that is the time when my wife returned to work and I became the full-time carer at home. So the boys were about 1.5 when that happened. It's something that I thought that I'd just jump in and, you know, grab the bull by the horn, so to speak, and run with it. And I did for a long time. it's not something that I would have naturally turned my hand to, being an outdoors person, and eventually became a tradesperson in that history as well. But I've had to find space for myself in amongst that, because running a home is quite a busy job. And I know that there's probably lots of mums out there going, "Yes, yes, say it, say it." But it's true.
It's true.
Finding time for the person who is in the background organising everything that happens in the day is difficult.
Wow. Yeah. Well, let's get into that now. Let's talk about it. Probably a good idea to know for us to know about the twins, the boys. You know their story. Their birth, you said they were premature. Just run us through what happened in the lead up to that, and how it was that they came into the world.
Yeah, it was both exciting and chaotic time of my life. I had a previous marriage. I had two boys already, and my new partner, we'd known each other for a couple of years by then, and we're engaged, and we're looking at having children. And so I guess this is the thing about remarrying a lady who doesn't have children of her own. It's a bit of a desire that we should share that. So that's what we aimed for. And three would have been a nice number, really. Cars are all made to have three kids in the back, and our whole life sort of revolves around that. But we got a big surprise when twins turned up in the ultrasounds, and so that was the first shock, I suppose. We also got married in those very early weeks of the pregnancy, and I clearly remember we got married one weekend. It was an outdoor wedding. It's beautiful, magnificent. It's just, the dreams are made of. And the next Friday we had a ultrasound appointment. We had already known that we had twins by then, but the ultrasound guy was just a bit different. He was very quiet and an interesting soul, but he never really said much, never really gave much away. But He disappeared from the room after we'd seen both the boys were alive and well, and then he came back and he sat us down and he said, there are a few issues. And we sort of looked at each other and you see the seriousness on his face, and he said, "Look, you have something called twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome." And
what is that?
So that is, just for the benefit of our listeners, a syndrome that only applies to identical twins, and it's where blood vessels grow across the top of the placenta and the two babies become a common blood supply. Previous to that, normally identical twins have a percentage of the placenta each, and they have their own blood supply, but they grow vessels across the top and they combine and share the same blood supply.
Okay.
It all sounds great in theory until you find that one twin becomes bigger, much faster, and grows very quickly, and the other twin actually becomes a donor and essentially is starving.
I see.
So we had a case where our biggest twin was growing at a very fast rate and had this nice big sack of fluid around him. And our second twin, who was essentially shrink-wrapped inside mum, and his growth had almost stopped. And he looked at us and he said, "This is not something you can wait till next week." He said, "I want you to go home, pack your bags." I've made a phone call to Brisbane because we were living in Darwin at that stage. "And I want you on an aeroplane tonight and go and see him. He's ready. He's happy to see you tomorrow." Tomorrow is a Saturday, of course. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it took a moment to sink in.
Yeah.
It really, we'd only been married, 5 days.
Yeah.
And we had a big party and it was great. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Life seemed pretty good. And I was very excited about having twins. It's something I thought would be awesome. And don't get me wrong, it's awesome. But some of the problems encountered on the way can be challenging. So, we hopped on an airplane that night. We got packed up, came to Brisbane. They put us up in, I actually can't remember where we stayed. I guess that's not important, but fronted up to the hospital the next day and introduced ourselves and got thrown a heap of options, or three options put on the table. The hospital we had been recommended to was a Catholic hospital, though, so there was only one option available to us, even though there was three options in reality. And so we had to make a decision.
Well, what were the three options you were given?
Three options were to terminate one, terminate both, there's four options, I guess, wait and see, mm-hmm. or have a laser surgery where they use a laser in utero to sever the vessels that run across the top of the placenta.
Okay.
And so it wasn't a really tough decision, really. But, yeah, the other three options weren't really an option, so we just went with option A and said let's do the op and see what happens.
Okay.
So we got home. We got the rest of the afternoon off. We fronted up the next morning, and it happened. And then we just had to wait and see. And encouragingly, we were basically told when that operation was done that it was a success it was a medical success, and it was really up to the boys now how this happened. But our best and most likely outcome would be one healthy baby.
Really? That was the best you could hope for?
That was the best outcome we could hope for. Lots of errors in between.
So now
that was a bit of a shake. So that was basically going, okay, we're awesome. We're going to have twins too. And we're going to be lucky if we have one. Yeah.
So this all happens within like the span of 48 hours. You get the ultrasound. The next day you're in Brisbane and you have the surgery that day.
Or the next day, the Sunday.
The next day. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
And so you and your wife, are you able to, like, imagining this from the point of view of your relationship, the two of you. You both suddenly cast into this world that you hadn't expected a week earlier. How are you both coping together with this in the early stages?
Yeah, it's a real test of loyalty and ability to cope, I guess. Of course, there was plenty of tears and fears. I guess in grand scheme of things, we're still fairly young in our relationship as well, a couple of years on. It was a huge test.
And you're still together now, the two of you, aren't you?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
One that we once again took the bull by the horns. We don't believe in doing things easy. as this interview goes on, you'll hear about this. We're well known for doing everything the hard way. So.
Is she the same? Is she? She has the same approach, does she?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I think we've both got backgrounds of doing it the hard
You've
way.
Done so well. Well, mate, you've done so well, because obviously the challenge on the relationship is a huge part of the dynamic here, isn't it?
Yes.
For parents when there are children with disabilities. So, all right, well, I won't talk too much. You keep going. So you have the surgery. What happens next?
They kept us hanging around for the next couple of days, doing an ultrasound each day to make sure, well, just to see what was going to happen, really. There was nothing more medically they could do except watch and wait. And I think late that Monday, they did their second ultrasound and said, there's a good bit of fluid forming around twin number two now. He's alive. He's still in the game, although his odds are very slim. And so now it's really up to him. The ball's in his court. It's up to him to see how he goes. So,
okay. So you went
we were
back
sent home.
To
we were just, yeah. We flew back home, and life somewhat returned to normal. I mean, somewhat as in the stress was still there, but there was nothing we could do, nothing we could do anywhere. We just had to sit this thing out and wait and see, as anyone with the same experience will know. It's just a waiting game then, and the clock's ticking. And essentially we were given the hope that the longer they stay in utero, the more success we'll have at the end of the day. So we lived life for the next we got to 25 weeks, and waters broke in the morning, and then we thought, oh dear, this is not quite as far along as we were hoping, but it was a bit of a shock because we've been running along not too badly, and there's been little niggles here and there, but life had been continuing on, and so we took a little trip into Darwin General Hospital, and they had a bit of a look, and they gave us two options. They said either we can deliver them now, or we can send you back to Brisbane. The reason they gave us those options is because they didn't believe that they had the facilities or the ability to stave off an infection should it happen in that instance. So our only option was to deliver or send us to somewhere who could. Of course, we jumped on an aeroplane. Well, actually, it didn't quite happen that way. My wife got allocated a medevac flight.
Wow.
She was given drugs to help prevent an imminent labour.
Yeah.
And patient travel organised me a flight to Brisbane to meet her there. That was just one of those days that still stay inside my head, because there was no guarantee on when that medevac flight was going to happen. And they'd locked in a flight for me to go to Brisbane via Sydney with a stopover in Sydney. So I had, I can't remember, I think it's about a 3.5-4 hour flight straight from Darwin to Brisbane, and I had to go via Sydney with a stopover. So I had something like a 7-hour flight. So I raced home and packed my gear and packed some stuff for Deb, and we got it all happen. I got delivered to the airport, jumped on an aeroplane, leaving her in Darwin, and with everything crossed, wondering what was going to happen, because I could have just as easily been halfway to Sydney or stuck in Brisbane when she went into spontaneous labour.
So what did happen?
It's and I hadn't missed a birth to date, so. After a very nervous flight and a very nervous wait in Brisbane, her medevac flight got delayed a couple of times, and she eventually got over late in the evening. And we had a bit of a holiday in the Mater at Brisbane, the Mater Mother's Hospital, while we awaited the birth. And so once we're there, I'm in very good care again. The same fellow who looked after us earlier, and we were able to sit out as long as we needed to. Now, there's our little twin we'd been tracking. We'd had an ultrasound each week to make sure that they were both still alive, and they were both see a bit of an estimate on weight, and just to see whether they were still growing. And a little bit of hope had raised up inside us by that stage, because we could see the little battler, little twin number two, he'd continued to grow since he'd had his chance to have his own food supply again. He'd tracked along at the same trajectory as his bigger brother.
Wow.
But at approximately half the weight.
We were.
It was a bit of a guessing game of his weight, because babies that have undergrown a bit of growth restriction are much more difficult to estimate. But so we had everything crossed, and we were just praying and hoping like crazy that they'd stay there as long as they could in the oven, as long as they could, because that's where they needed to be. And then we're there for nearly 2 weeks. We got to 26 plus 6 days is where we got to. And the little fighter, the little bugger, who has to do everything his own way, and this is still evident today.
Yes.
He said, "Nah, Mum, I've had enough. I'm out of here. There's not enough room in here anymore. Big brother's taken up all the space." And he dropped a leg out through the cervix and said, "Right, I'm coming." And that's about when it all happened. So once again, we're prepped and prepared. We had emergency magnesium in anticipation that, you know, those drugs help prevent problems such as CP in difficult and challenging birth situations. So we essentially did as much as we could in the time we had, and there's nothing we could have done more in that instance. And a few hours later, they were born by emergency cesarean.
And what were their weights?
Well, I hope you're all sitting down, because I have to pinch myself every time I see a photo of them both. But Alex came out first. He was the big one. He was pretty healthy. He had a bit of a cry on the way out, so we knew he was pretty right. And he turned out to be 830 grams. So he was the big one. I don't know whether you can imagine 830 grams, but what's the average? About 3 kilos these days. See, that's a quarter of that.
Yeah, he's tiny.
Yeah. And then out come twin two. He's like a little scun rabbit. He's just nothing more than him than that. And he weighed in at a hefty 470 grams.
Oh, mate. Wow.
So if you can imagine a tub of butter or a can of Coke or something like that, that's about the size. And it, even though we were prepared, we'd been through the neonatal care unit and we'd seen some small bubs, they didn't have anyone the size of Jim. There was no way of preparing ourselves for that. He was just tiny.
So you both, are they both crying? They're both...
No, not exactly.
No.
we were told straight up front that they would wait for the boys to show us that they wanted to be here, so there'd be a minimal amount of stimulation applied, and they would have to say to the world that they were ready to be here.
Wow.
And Alex, he came along pretty well. He got on the warm table and was you know, showing good signs early on. Jimmy probably took a little bit longer, but he still said he wanted to be in the game. So the effort rose and the attention focused on him and away they went. And I guess that was the last we saw of him for a couple of hours. But by the time we saw him, they were all tubed up. And Jimmy, the smallest, had... a machine breathing for him, and he was, when I say he looked like a scun rabbit, anyone who's ever seen a scun rabbit, it's exactly what he looked like. His eyes were still closed. I have a photo of him holding my finger, his little hand holding my finger. It's like ribbons of string wrapped around my finger. Like he couldn't even grab hold of it. His hand just didn't go around it. He was so small. So the odds, once again, very firmly stacked against him, and those early days were pretty tough. We hoped he would survive, but really didn't expect him. How can something that small survive? It's just incredible.
And yet here he is.
Here he is.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So how long were you in NICU then? How long were they in special care?
Well, it was a pretty rough ride through NICU. And to be honest, we didn't spend any time in special care. We completely skipped that step. But Alex stayed until about his birth date, so he's in there for about 3 months.
Mm.
They both had a 100-day birthday party in there. And,
wow.
A Father's Day and a couple of birthdays for the other kids. And, yeah, it was an interesting time of our lives. We're, two older boys, we got a room in Ronald McDonald House across the road, and we're just walking backwards and forwards each day, spend time and read books and just be with them and let them know that we're here thinking about them, talking to them. We had all of us, four of us, jammed into one little tiny room in Ronald McDonald House with shared facilities. But that's what you do. You just make do, and you're happy to have that chance to be close because, you know, we were 3,500. We lived 3,500 kilometres away. What else were we going to do?
And what were the other two doing, your other two back in Darwin? How old were they?
We flew them over. We got them flown over, and they lived with us for the first month.
Oh, okay.
Of the twins' life. The hospital's great. They have their own school there for kids, and they attended school to the hospital school with lots of other kids and their siblings that were sick and around the hospital. And life was somewhat normal. They got to come in and see their brothers from time to time. That was pretty stringent on the code of getting in and out of places like that, of course.
And how old were how old were they at the time?
I'm just trying to think. One was 9. The other must have been 7.
Yeah. I mean, what an incredible experience for them at that age to be going through with you two. I mean, and with their new brothers. Like we could spend all day talking about these, and there are so many things to talk about here. I don't know which one to pick. But are they okay? Yeah. Like, how was that experience, do you reckon, looking back on it now, 9 years later, the fact that they had to, or didn't have to, but that they experienced that with you up close in those really uncertain months?
It certainly shook their world. But I don't see that there was any other way around it. Because wife and I lived in Darwin, we were removed from both parents. We had one set of parents in Sydney, one set of parents in Victoria. And luckily we had Deb's sister who had recently moved to Brisbane, so we had some support, although they were nearly an hour's drive away. We had a little bit of family help there from time to time. And after a while, my mum flew up and spent some time with us, camped at my sister-in-law's house and would come in almost every day, and she spent a lot of time in special care in the NICU with us, shared a lot of milestones and shared a lot of two steps backwards, lots of tears. But the boys, we shielded them from the worst of it, but kept them in the loop and made sure that they had a connection with them and that they were involved in that. And then after a month or so, we could see that this was going to be a somewhat lengthy ordeal. And we had Deb's parents fly up to Darwin and hang out with them in Darwin so they could go back to school and resume some sort of normal life while we continued to be with Alex and Jim. Now, at that time there, I was really lucky. I had a somewhat flexible job, and I was able to work for 1 week and have 3 weeks off.
Okay.
Being on call in those 3 weeks, but I didn't have to be face to face. So I was flying back to Darwin for a week and spending a week with the older boys, then flying back to Brisbane and spending 3 weeks and doing that for most of the journey.
This was 3 months, did you say?
That was the first 3 months. Unfortunately, Jimmy's a survivor. He really is.
Apparently, his journey, yes.
Yeah. His journey is not in a straight line. He zigzagged all over the place. I mean, as I said, he started out ventilated, and 6 weeks later he was still ventilated, and we'd had a couple of failed attempts to the next stage, and then just by chance we had a young nurse looking after him one day who had essentially made a drug error in a diuretic, and hey, he had been given a 10 times the dose, essentially. He got the decimal point in one spot. Now, it was a human error. It was something that we couldn't get too upset with her about, because it was such an easy thing to have gotten wrong. But it actually led to him succeeding off of ventilation and onto some form of breathing by himself.
Is that so right?
We've got to celebrate that a little bit, in that this poor girl who actually sat us down and told us what she'd done wrong, because she was and was so upset about it. She was in tears and felt so bad about it. She actually helped him get to the next step. Did something that none of the people who were involved in his care could have foreseen, and was certainly not protocol at the time. There were steroids involved and all that sort of stuff to try and help his lungs mature enough to become breathing on his own. And it just so happened that our normal neonatologist was on a week's holiday, and we had a visiting neonatologist in, and she took the bull by the horns. There's a lot of taking bull by the horns here, isn't there? Speaking of testosterone, yeah, she grabbed it.
It's a theme, yes.
She grabbed it and said, right, let's give this a go. You know, this is something we haven't done before. And but she was had trained in the UK, and there was another system that they'd used over there. She said, "I think we're gonna try this. We'll give it a go. We've got absolutely nothing to lose. You know, he's got to graduate here soon, or what are we gonna do? We're running out of options." So I said, "Righto, let's drive this thing and let's take it here and see what happens." And he just made it. I mean, he was borderline for the next 3 days. It was 3 days before he declared himself that he was going to graduate to the next level. And it was just touch and go the whole time. And just a bit of an idea of when we say touch and go, the touch and go is where you walk into the room and find 10 people standing around your little crib with your boy out on the table doing what they can to keep him alive. And those scenes were fairly regular at that stage. And really hard to deal with.
I can't imagine, honestly. Can I ask you, we'll just skip ahead a little bit. How did it come about then, after all of this intense beginning, that you became the stay-at-home dad, the primary carer? What's your wife's profession?
Yeah, so my wife's background is in the medical, and she is a GP. She was just.
But I'd be interested in that. Okay, I'd love to hear the conversation. How did it come about that you both agreed to this role that you both have?
I guess it came down to finances, essentially. Her career, she'd spent her whole life doing this, and had dedicated her life to medicine. And I wasn't about to stand in the way of that. My life had been, the time that I'd spent in Darwin after I'd left the farm had been as a tradesperson, and it was never going to progress the way her career could progress. So it was just a natural, it's just a natural progression, there wasn't even a thinking about it. It was just, that's the way it really needed to go. One, for us to survive, and two, for her to be allowed to continue to develop.
Interesting. I hear what you're saying about the finances, but there's more to it than that, isn't there? You were obviously willing to do that and make all the adaptations and changes. And it would have been tough for her too to, you know, have to focus on work when she had so much going on at home.
Absolutely. And she's an absolute trooper because I sent her back to work. And the boys were still being breastfed, so she'd spend every spare minute that she had pumping in her room in between patients that we had breast milk for them because we knew that that was the best way forward for them. And so we just made it work. You know, it was lots of juggling. It was absolute commitment. And then... In the surprise of all that, so if you want to fast forward the clock, well, just before we fast forward the clock a little bit, we learnt that Alex was our big healthy baby who seemed to be okay, but he had a bit of a rough start too. And at the 3 week old mark, he had failed a couple of times in taking full feeds. And so they'd rest him and then we'd start again just using a drip to make sure that they were sustained in life. But about the 3 week mark, his little belly blew up and he turned purple and everyone got really worried about him. So we've got Jimmy over there on a ventilator still at this stage, not knowing where that was going to finish. And our seemingly healthy, normal baby just became very unwell, to the point of where, and we did agree to this for non-selfish reasons, that they actually brought a small group of medical students past his crib to see him, to show them how unwell, how quickly someone can turn relatively healthy or seemingly healthy baby can turn unwell.
Yeah.
And they'd done x-rays, they'd done all sorts of stuff and no one really knew what was going on. It really didn't. And then, he sort of declared himself. He declined very quickly and surgery was the only option to find out what the devil was going on inside his belly. It blew up like a balloon and no one, we couldn't tell on x-ray. We didn't know what was going on. So we sent him off to surgery at 3 weeks old. He wasn't even a kilo big at that stage, not knowing what was going to happen. They brought him back. It was a pretty long surgery. And they brought him back a few hours later, all in one piece, thank goodness. And what had happened is that he'd had a bowel obstruction. He'd had a bit of bowel twist on itself, and then it perforated. And at that age, that size, a perforated bowel is a major health concern. He's very lucky that he survived that.
Yeah.
And lucky we're in Brisbane because the doctor that operated on him managed to stitch his little bowel back together. He took out the dead bit. He took out the bit that was broken and put him back together. And he delivered back with a scar across his tummy and from that day forward, it hasn't been all perfect, of course, but he grew from that day forward. He started growing, and he started eating, and it's a continual cause of problems for us. But it saved his life. A week later, though, unfortunately, is one of the darkest days of my time ever.
Yeah.
And that is when we had so as a routine, these little preemies have an ultrasound of their head, which is a brain scan, an ultrasound, just to check to make sure that there's no damaged areas in the birthing process. They have it at a week and they have it at 4 weeks. So it's totally routine. They have that and they have their eyes checked every week, which is a bit of a horrendous progress in program too. But they come through with no problems with their eyes. But Alex's scan at 4 weeks showed up some abnormalities that we were hoping just weren't real. But now, when we got the results of that, I was actually by Alex's side by myself. Deb was back in her room having a rest, because you imagine it's a pretty stressful time. We'd only just got him back, really. He'd been back a week when he had this ultrasound done.
Yeah.
And we thought that we were home and hosed and everything was dandy again. But we got some information that his scan had come back abnormal and that they wanted to talk to us. So I talked to the neonatologist and they took me into the room and they said, look, we've found some abnormalities, and showed me the scans. Now, I'm not of medical background, so I really didn't know what I was looking at, but the question that rocked my world that I asked was, so in a scale of 10, how bad is this? And she said, it's really difficult to tell you, but just from a subjective look at these ultrasounds, I would have said an 8, with 10 being the most severe. And I went, oh. Okay, she went on further to say, I don't know what life is going to bring for him, but I would suspect that he has a fair chance of being unresponsive and not ever growing up, never maturing, and not being being nothing much more than a vegetable, which was pretty hard words to hear after horrendous months of
And Deb's not there while you're hearing this. You're hearing this on your own.
Correct, yeah. So, yeah, I had to read.
So you then had to tell her. So did you tell her, or did they tell her?
No, I told her.
Yeah, man.
And the ensuing, the following days were just dark.
Yeah.
Sort of reflect on them a little bit and it's not a space I ever want to go to again. It was really difficult, but luckily I've got a glass half full sort of attitude.
And yeah, you must.
I went back to him and said, look, okay, I hear what you're saying and I'm not prepared to give up yet. No one ultrasounded my brain when I was that age. No one can tell me I don't suffer from the same thing, and I'm doing okay. So it's just renewed vigor and give it a shot. And
Mate, listen, I would love to hear more about the next 9 years. We haven't even got there yet. We're still in the start.
Yeah.
But listen, I do have a time limit. So what I wanted to ask you, because this is about Father's Day, you know, let's talk about you for a second as a dad. Yeah. I just, you know, you've already revealed an awful lot about yourself by the way you talk and the things that you've been through and the choices you've made. And, you know, good on you, mate. There's not many people who are either able or willing to do what you've done. So that's the first thing. I really admire, you know, you say it's a glass half full attitude. I'm not sure what it is, but it's kept you going. I wanted to ask you two questions in particular. Firstly, do you think that there are things about this experience that are different for dads than they are for mums? I'm not asking you to be an expert. I'm just asking you, what do you think about that?
Yeah. I guess traditionally dads have been a little bit removed from the whole early childhood scenario. It's, you know, mum carries the baby. She has a very close relationship with it. And as my boys have grown, they've chosen, and they naturally do choose their mum. She's a bit more gentler. And
mum is mum. You can't replace
mum's mum, exactly.
Yeah.
We've found our place together, you know, and even Jimmy, who's always been a mum's right-hand boy now really enjoys hanging out with me, so it's good. From the differences, I don't know. I guess traditionally men have had a hard time talking about this stuff. And they keep it inside, and I can't say that I've been too much different to that. I'm just lucky that I'm resilient enough to and maybe that's a little bit to do with my background. I am very comfortable in my own head, very comfortable in my own space, and quite enjoy being in that space. So lots of thinking time, lots of reflection, lots of tinkering in the shed.
Yeah.
Well,
don't dismiss that lightly. I think that may well be a very important thing. You know, if that's your thing, we've all got to find it, haven't we? And
we do. Yeah. I have a bit of a passion that hasn't. I like my four wheel drive. I like getting out in the countryside. It's my vehicle of choice, and I tinker and play with it. And I'm a bit of a project man. So once I get on a project, no one else sees me. It's one thing I've just struggled a little bit is trying to make sure I get everything else done before I do my project. Otherwise,
because once you're in there, that's it.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's obviously essential to your own health and well-being, isn't it? To be able to be someone else, you know, at that time. You're the guy tinkering on the four-wheel drive with his mates. You're not dad. You're not carer. You're somebody else in those times, aren't you?
Yeah, and it's been being a P dad makes it very difficult to connect to other dads.
Yeah,
it's much different. We are just our experience has led us down a totally different path, and it's very difficult to connect with other fellows.
Yeah, it is.
Other men on the same level because you can't take that experience away. Once you've had it, it's there, and it's a little bit hard. I am happy that those other people have got this more simple lives, and mine's more complicated. It's harder for them to understand, but it's also difficult for me to dismiss the little whinges that they might have about their lives, that you go, geez, mate, you know what? That is so minuscule and so minor.
Yeah.
It's a bit like man flu. Get over it. Build a bridge. Move forward. Life's not that bad, mate. You're doing all right.
It's interesting. The P's have a term for that. Somebody who talks shit about things they don't know anything about are rectums. So you could say arsehole, but they are rectums. And, you know, so blokes encounter those as well as the mums. And it's not it's not entirely a criticism. I mean, I'd be the same, I guess, if I was talking to somebody about an experience I didn't have personally. Who knows what
absolutely
sort of rubbish I would say without meaning to or knowing it. But it's there, isn't it? Do you know any Do you know any other dads who are the primary carers, stay-at-home dads like yourself?
I do. I know of one other who also has a medical wife.
Yes.
who doesn't live so far away. So,
yeah. You mean me, right. Yeah, okay. Peas is talking about me.
There's three of us.
I didn't even know that. You'll have to introduce me to this bloke.
I will. Their journey's been a little bit different, but essentially the same. He's the homebody. He keeps the wheels running at home And
it's important, isn't it, to be able to at least sometimes talk to somebody who you don't have to explain everything to when you're talking.
Exactly.
Let me ask you a final question, mate. Do you reckon this whole experience you've had with disability, which is ongoing, you know, it's not something that comes to an end, but up to this point, do you reckon it's changed you as a person or as a parent?
I guess it hasn't changed the underlying core of who I am. I can remember a time where I'd started seeing disability, I wondered what would happen if it happened to me. Well, how would I go? Because I'd met another family who lived close to where I lived on a farm who had a child with a disability. And I always wondered to myself quietly, never gave a lot of air, but I did wonder how I would handle that. What would I do different, or what would I do the same, or what would that mean for life for me? And in reality, it just means that you do what you got to do. And you don't look back. You can't look back and go, oh, I should have done that. It's too late, it's done. And you got to keep moving forward and doing the best you can, surviving the best way you can. And so I think I keep that in mind, and keep taking one foot in front of the other and moving forward, no matter how bleak a outcome might be on the horizon. You just got to take it by the horns again and run with it and make the best of what you've got.
There's that bull again. I remember you saying once that when you were contemplating the things you're not sure that you would, how you would cope with them, you know, you've actually discovered that you are far better at them than you would have even imagined. Aren't you?
Yeah.
You've kind of like risen to the occasion.
Yes, I think the state of our family has proven that I've risen enough to cover all bases, and actually I look back on it now and go, I am so glad that I had the ability to do that. Mm. I am so proud of what my two boys have achieved.
Mm.
Just to let listeners know that both my boys go to a mainstream school.
Wow.
One of them is only very mildly affected with CP. The other one is severely affected, rides in a wheelchair, and surprisingly that's the big one, that's Alex. He goes to a mainstream school. We do a bit of schooling at home. We do schooling at school. But we've risen to that challenge. We're making it work. And all I've got to say to anyone listening is don't give up.
Yeah.
You fight this with all your passion and give it whatever you've got, because the rewards are there. The rewards are there if you want to go looking for them. So,
and that applies to dads as well as mums, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And equally applies.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
What we've achieved is nothing short of amazing, I think.
Trevor, it's been an absolute delight to have this conversation with you. Thank you again for joining us. We do to kind of wrap it up there for time. Maybe we can pick this up again some other time, even if it's not till next Father's Day or something. That's if Mandy and Kate, you know, want us back. But it's been fantastic.
Thanks, Mandy and Kate. Good
yeah, thank you, ladies, and thank you to the Peas for listening. And we will wish you all the very best for the rest of today. Survive lockdown and look after each other. We'll keep each other safe.
Okay.
Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.